Today on Uncommon Stories, we will dress up in our very best suits and dresses, wrap a very special present, and head off to a church or special beautiful place to enjoy the joining of a lovely couple in holy matrimony, and find out where the wedding ceremony came from, and how wedding rings came to be a significant symbol of a lasting bond for the lovely couple. Wedding ceremonies can be as elegant as a royal wedding, with flowers galore, an orchestra, singers, incredibly extravagant dresses and tuxes, or uniforms, and a completely decorated large church. Or they can be as simple as an outdoor wedding in a field, with family and a few friends wearing everyday attire. But at just about every wedding, there are people involved that have specific functions for the ceremony, such as the minister or leader who conducts the ceremony, the parents of the bride and groom, singers, organists, or musicians of some type, bridesmaids, groomsmen, ushers, ring bearers, flower girls, and the list goes on. However, the two people who are probably most important for the bride and groom in traditional European and U.S. weddings are the maid of honor and the best man. And the parts these two play have greatly changed over the years. Considering this, do you know the original role the best man played to help a groom before the wedding? And no, it's not to set up the bachelor party. Think about it, and we'll see if you're right at the end of our story. In our lifetimes, we are accustomed to weddings and marriages. They are almost a foregone conclusion in one's life. After many graduate high school, go to college, or work for a few years, sometimes before or during, a couple will date, fall in love, and get married. And many women imagine their wedding day from an early age. But it wasn't always this way. In the hunter-gatherer times, thousands of years ago, people lived in clans of 30 or so people, with several male leaders, women, and children. There were no unions to speak of, and the clans multiplied because the men and women of the clan, well, did what men and women do. But for reasons unknown, a man and a woman in 2350 BC, somewhere in Mesopotamia, as recorded evidence suggests, decided to have a ceremony declaring their relationship exclusive. And thus, weddings came into being. And the concept of institutionalizing a relationship caught on. And it wasn't long before ancient Hebrews, Greeks, and Romans began having their own styles of weddings. However, early marriages had little to do with attraction, ultimate friendship, or love. Religion wasn't even part of the equation. Unions between men and women were mostly arranged by parents to connect families, their businesses, and so the man would have legitimate heirs. Regardless of why the couple was getting married, the wedding was a time to celebrate the union and party. And party they did. Many wedding ceremonies lasted for days, and if the two families were royalty, aristocrats, or had lots of money and resources, the celebration could last for weeks. Weddings have toned down a little since then, but it's still an important ceremony and celebration. Also, there are many very interesting types of weddings, from one end of the globe to the other. So on that note, let's look at a few weddings from different cultures and see how people around the world tie the knot. We'll start in Japan, where weddings are some of the most elaborate anywhere. And although marriages sometimes are still arranged, the celebration of the union is extravagant. Modern-day Japanese couples have combined Western-style weddings with the more traditional Japanese Shinto ceremony. A Shinto shrine is the location of the nuptials and is often located in a hotel where the entire festival takes place. Taking photos is a large part of the pre- and post-ceremony. This is obviously a more modern part of the wedding, and not a surprising one, as Japan is a huge player in the photography and camera business. On the day of the wedding, the bride and groom join each other at a beauty parlor. The bride is usually painted white head to toe to symbolize purity. She also wears a kimono wig, either a white hood or sunokakuski. A Shinto priest conducts the ceremony. The highlights are the speech of the go-between, a person who speaks on behalf of the couple, drinking of the cups of sake, and finally the lighting of a candle. Funny thing, with all the fancy display, the couple is actually married prior to the ceremony, by signing civil documents of marriage. But the ceremony is incredibly beautiful. In India, wedding ceremonies can vary depending on what region the couple is from, but they are all spectacular affairs that symbolize more of the coming together of two families than the union of the couple. Before the wedding day, Bayaha Hath, a ceremony of purification takes place. Attendants, seven unmarried women, apply a paste of sandalwood, turmeric, and rose water to the bride's and groom's face, hands, and feet. The couple are not allowed to leave home once this ceremony takes place until the day of the wedding. The couple wear traditional Indian dress and exchange vows, the most important part of the ceremony. The bride sits on the right side of the groom, where acquaintances are seated. She moves to the left side after the vows are spoken. The groom then offers a list of promises to care for his bride. In Rajput, the groom, who is the one that is veiled, arrives on horseback. Since Indian weddings in general are major social events, it's not unusual for hundreds to show up for the festivities, and most of them, the groom and his lovely bride, most likely don't even know. Moving to Mexico, where the majority of the population are devout Roman Catholics, the ceremony is held in a Catholic church. But unlike an old country Roman Catholic wedding, more Central American traditions are observed. The godparents, madrinas and padrinos, play a vital role. The madrinas de lazo carries a rope, which is usually a rosary or wreath made from orange blossoms, symbolizing fertility. This rope is placed around the couple's head in a figure eight. The madrina de aras holds 13 coins that have been blessed by the priest. These coins symbolize the joint finances of the couple. In Mexico, people can have many godparents, so the other godparents carry wine glasses for the wedding toast. And there will be several toasts and several opportunities to drink wine. In a very touching moment at the reception, the guests form a heart-shaped ring around the couple for their first dance. And of course, they will dance to the music of a traditional Mexican mariachi band. Now, this is a ceremony everyone should witness at least once. In the Muslim country of Morocco, although more modern styles have changed some of the customs, brides and grooms celebrate part of their wedding ceremony apart from each other. The men eating, drinking, and dancing in one location, while the women do the same in another location. But it all starts roughly 5 days before the festivities with family and friends preparing for the big day. The bride's nagafa, older women connected to the bride, play an important role in the preparation. First, they prepare the bridal chamber. Then they call for the bride and prepare her for the wedding. After giving her a purifying hamamam bath, they decorate her hands and feet with henna designs, which are very elaborate and detailed. Kohl makeup is applied to her eyes, and then she is finally dressed in her wedding kaftan and jewelry. On the day of the ceremony, as the men and women finish their separate celebrations, it is time for the groom and bride to be united. Now here is the interesting part. When it is time, the bride is carried on a platform by her nagafa to the groom's home. The nagafa certainly do a lot for the couple on their big day. Once the bride reaches her destination, the mother-in-law lifts her veil. The bride then circles her new home 3 times and then is allowed to enter. This is a very different ceremony than most, but certainly one that is steeped in tradition, honor, and very touching. As mentioned earlier, more modern customs have changed things in some Muslim weddings, but the ceremony still lasts for days, as marriage is seen as the most important decision that men and women can make. We will end with the Korean wedding. As the Muslim wedding follows the tradition of Islam, the Korean wedding follows the values of Confucius, and every move and gesture follows a strict regimen. Like the Japanese wedding, photos start off the ceremony. The bride and groom are dressed in traditional Korean wedding clothes, which can be a little difficult to maneuver in. When the photos are finished, the bride's party go to where the ceremony is to take place and wait for the groom's party to arrive. Typically, the best man leads the way and goes to the parents and makes them a gift of a mandarin duck. The groom then takes his position at the table on the east side. The bride arrives and sits at the west side. No words are spoken. it is a very simple but touching ceremony. The couple wash their hands, bow to each other, and then exchange a drink of wine. They bow to each other again, and they are married. It's a short ceremony for all the fancy clothes and preparation, but very traditional and beautiful. So, we know when and where weddings started, and we know why people first got married. We've also touched on some of the wedding ceremonies and their traditions from around the world. But what about the popular European and U.S. weddings? Where did their traditions come from? And what does all of the symbolism in the ceremony mean? As straightforward as they seem, you might be surprised. As dresses for the women of the bridal party, as well as the mothers, are a big part of the wedding, we'll start with the origin of the bridesmaids and the fancy dresses they adorn. In more modern times, bridesmaids wear dresses that coincide with the color scheme of the wedding, and men wear tuxes or accessories that match the bridesmaids' dresses. Everyone matches, and the wedding party looks beautiful. But that wasn't always the case. Originally, bridesmaids wore dresses that were similar to what the bride wore. They did this to confuse the bride's ex-boyfriends and evil spirits that might try to ruin the wedding. You'll find a lot of traditions were created due to the fact so many people earlier in history were quite superstitious. One of the original duties of the bridesmaids was to protect the bride from anyone trying to intervene and stop the wedding, or try to steal the bride's dowry as they escorted her to the wedding. That's one tradition I'm sure everyone is glad faded out as time went by. While we're on dresses, what about the bride's beautiful white wedding dress? Well, at first, brides wore black or dark dresses, here again to ward off evil spirits. A little later, they began to wear red, which stood for good fortune, success, love, and fertility. Fertility was big when marriages first started. Having true heirs meant that the business and money of the family would stay in the family. Also, large families meant greater luck and fortune. Also, you had more people to work for the family as well. But in 1840, Queen Victoria went against tradition and had an amazing white lacy dress made for her wedding. White, at the time, represented wealth, and the Queen was all too happy to show off her wealth. The new style caught on quickly and has been tradition ever since. Sticking with what the bride wears during the wedding, do you know why they wear something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue? The old connects the bride to her family and friends. The new, not surprisingly, shows that she is starting a new part of her life. The borrowed is supposed to be given from a married couple to give part of their good fortune in marriage to her and her groom. And the blue refers to faithfulness and loyalty for the marriage, such as the phrase, true blue. But most people forget the end of the rhyme. And a sixpence in my shoe. This says that a bride is supposed to put a sixpence coin in her shoe for good fortune and prosperity. In ancient Greece, brides would carry bouquets of herbs and spices to again ward off evil spirits, and this custom carried into medieval times. But brides from this period added garlic and stronger smelling spices, not to ward off evil spirits, as much to ward off the strong smell from the bridal party. You see, people didn't bathe as much during this time, so it wasn't the sweetest smell when everyone gathered for a ceremony. And this leads us to the tradition of May and June weddings. Throughout the ages, many weddings are planned during these months, and it wasn't just because of the weather. Early May, in early times, was when most people took their annual bath. Yes, I said annual. So if you wanted a nice-smelling wedding back then, you had it in late May or June. Now on to a tradition that isn't really part of the wedding ceremony, but is traditional nonetheless, the honeymoon. In modern times, newlyweds leave the wedding and go off for a romantic getaway to a lavish, beautiful resort to celebrate their union and new life together. But it didn't start out that way. Honeymoons in early days were literally an escape. The groom would take his new wife and hide her in an undisclosed location so family members and others who didn't approve of the marriage to begin with wouldn't be able to find her. After about a month or so, when things settled down, he would bring his wife back to the town and they could start their new life together. What a way to start a marriage. Now, back to the wedding ceremony itself and one of the most significant traditions, the giving of the wedding rings. Well, when weddings first started, it was actually giving of the wedding ring. In ancient history, marriage wasn't as much a union as it was a giving of daughter to a man to be his wife. In fact, one of the earliest accounts of a ring being given is in ancient Rome, when a man would give his bride a ring with a key on it, which symbolized ownership. Also, in early Roman, Greek, and Jewish cultures, rings were used as collateral to pay the father of the bride. Finally, in 1477, Archduke Maximilian of Austria had an extravagant diamond ring made for his wife. Other aristocracy borrowed the idea, and the tradition gradually made its way to the masses. Thankfully, we have moved on from the original reason behind giving a ring, and now it is custom for both the bride and groom to give rings. And I'm sure most of you have heard about the unbroken circle of a ring, suggesting the never-ending love of the couple, and that the rings are placed on the fourth finger on the left hand, as the myth is there is a vein from that finger that goes directly to the heart. That myth has been proven just that, a myth. But both meanings are endearing and add to the importance of the bond between the lovely couple. Well, between evil spirits, jealous exes, unhappy families, the wedding party giving off a foul smell, and ownership, some early European and U.S. weddings weren't the most joyous celebrations. But we did get a lot of our wedding traditions from them. Thankfully, we have rectified most of these issues, and weddings have grown to be beautiful, fun, and momentous occasions, albeit still a little nerve-wracking one. And although we probably spend a little more than necessary, weddings join couples and families together, so societies continue to grow and couples can live happily ever after, just like the storybooks say. So, have you thought about our question? What was the original role the best man played to help the groom before the wedding? As mentioned earlier, not all weddings had the blessings of parents, friends, or even townspeople. So sometimes grooms had to literally steal their brides away. And on the night that this would take place, the best man was in charge of fighting off anyone who tried to stop the groom from taking his soon-to-be wife. Thus, the best man truly had to be the best at fighting, using a sword or a weapon, and the best at defending the groom in his quest to marry his chosen bride. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories, and come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week, and thanks for listening.